Life has its ups and downs, and like many of us, I face moments with depression. Music has always helped me find my way through, and I believe it can do the same thing for you. I'm James Cox, and this is the When Words Fail Music Speaks Podcast, a podcast about the healing power of music.
Hey everybody, welcome back to When Words Fail Music Speaks, the podcast where we talk about how music helps and heals depression. I'm your professional handicapped host, James Cox, and I have a great interview today. This guy is amazing. He's a jazz artist, which I love jazz. I'm starting to become more involved in jazz, and I hope that he turns me on more into jazz, a jazz fan than I ever did, you know?
But today, I hope so.
Right. But okay. Okay. So your last name is pronounced Elefante, correct?
You nailed it.
All right. Today's guest is Joe Elefante, a jazz pianist, composer, educator, author, and lifelong student of what music can teach us about being human. For more than two decades, Joe has built a career in music and education, exploring the connection between listening, creativity, community, and personal growth. Joe, welcome to the show, brother. How are you doing today?
I'm feeling great, James. Thanks for having me today.
All right. Thank you for coming on, sir. This is going to be awesome. Yeah, because, yep. Well, for like 45 seconds ago, I said that I really wasn't a jazz listener, you know. Mm-hmm. Ever since this podcast, I've gotten more invested in jazz, you know. And I'm trying to understand the roots of jazz, you know, make it more personal to me, you know. Because my mm-hmm. favorite genre of all time is country, you know. Mm. Of course, that's Reba McEntire's and, you know, everything, Garth Brooks and George Strait, you know. But I feel like now I should really reach out to genres that I really don't understand, you know. And jazz is mm-hmm. one of them. So I'm grateful to get you here, you know.
And, well, I'll tell you a little bit about jazz if you teach me a little bit about country music.
Yes.
Because I don't know a whole heck of a lot about country music, okay. But I would love to learn more.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Okay. So I was listening to your two albums of yours before you got on.
Oh, cool! Thanks.
Jazz Tower, which came out in 2024, which was the last 2 years ago, right? This is 2026, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, 2 years ago, about I forget what month it came out, you know. But my favorite songs on there is Funky Things and Country Life, you know.
Okay.
So I do have a bone to pick with you, a funny bone to pick with you, okay?
Go.
Now, my mom grew up in Clarkson, Mississippi. My dad is from Sumter, South Carolina, okay? And there's always a battle between pecan and pecan. You, sir, are the South Carolina type, you know, because my dad says pecan, and my mom hates that. She's like, I don't know if you know what a pecan is, but it's not good, you know? Well, yeah.
A pecan. That's funny.
Yeah.
You know, what's really interesting about that is I recorded, so even though I released that album in 2024, I recorded it back probably over 20 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Most of it. And then I've been sort of working on it ever since. But the songs, I wrote all the songs over 20 years ago, including Butter Pecan. But in everyday conversation, if you ask me to say the name of the nut, I'd say pecan.
Okay. This is for rhyming purposes, right?
Well,
or kind of, sort of?
I can't tell you because it was 25 years ago. So maybe I did say pecan. I don't know.
Right. Yeah.
But it worked with the melody that I came up with. So I just went with buttered pecan. But I appreciate the nitpicky because I do.
Yeah. Because I'm like, dude, you can rhyme so many words with pecan on fawn. You know, it's like,
for sure.
Who knows? You know, 20 years ago, you probably pronounced it differently than what you do today. Yeah.
It would seem that way.
Yes. Yes. But so Return of the Light came out last year. I always got to think back. I'm like, what year is this, you know? In 2025. Songs from that album I love is Jazz for Dummies, which is a great title. You know, reminds me of all those books, you know?
Yeah, that was where I came up with it.
Yeah. Return of the Light, the beautiful, beautiful song right there.
Thank you.
Simple
Thank you.
Girl and Loving Kindness, you know.
Thank you.
And Loving Kindness is kind of a that's like a minute and a half song as opposed to, you know, the rest of the album, you know.
Yeah.
Now with that for I guess what just something to throw on the album, or did you really, you know?
The original thought before I got into the studio, the original thought was to flesh that song out and have it be more of like, a 6 or 7 minute song, like the rest of the songs on the album. We got into the studio, and my friend David, who's the percussionist on that album, came up with some. You probably heard that there's, other than the drum set, there's all this other percussion stuff going on too. He has all this Latin percussion going on, like congas. He's got a whistle. He's got a cuíca. He's got all this stuff. And I don't know. I was just sort of into the way it sounded over the melody, and I didn't feel the need at that point. When I heard all this other stuff going on, I didn't really feel the need to extend it to anything else. It was just, let this kind of speak for itself. And the album was kind of running longer than I'd thought anyway. So I thought, putting in a man, like you say, about a 90 second or so song would have been a nice break for the ear and for the brain, you know?
It's great, you know, because if you have, I guess it's like the like an offshoot of something, you know, off colored, off, you know, whatever. I'm not sure what I'm trying to say to you, but a break for ear is a big help, you know, because when you get these super long songs, kind of want to take it back to, you know, just very simple structure, you know.
Yeah, I agree.
But let's go back, way back in time. I don't know how old you are, but I'm 46, so way back in time.
I'm
This is 80.
47. We're about the
Oh,
same
nice.
age.
Yes, I love you for this. Yes, so it is. So you remember exactly what I remember, kind of, you know.
Most likely.
Okay, so before that, something popped in my head right now. So your album, Dry Tower 2024 album, released with lyrics. Return of Light did not release with lyrics. They were all instrumental, okay? So is it easier for you to do it with lyrics as opposed to without it, or and which one do you prefer to construct?
That's a great question. I wouldn't say one is necessarily easier than the other. But Jive Tower was more of like a jazz fusion. And I felt like the lyrics really added a lot to that. Whereas Return of the Light was more like spiritual contemplative jazz. So I didn't think that lyrics would have added as much to that project. So it was really more of like a choice than which one was easier or more difficult. It was just more like what fit the vibe of the project.
When you were writing Return to Light without lyrics, wasn't for specifically for the listener to come up with his or her own meaning of what's being heard, do you think?
Oh yeah, I mean, I even for songs where I write lyrics, I like for the listener to come up with their own interpretation. But certainly for instrumental jazz, and certainly for that album in particular, my two instrumental jazz albums, Wheel of Dharma and Return of the Light, are very very intentionally created them to be like contemplative jazz. So the type of jazz that makes people like sort of immerse themselves in the music and think. In my mind, that doesn't lead to like wild and like, oh, I visualize this color or this image or this story. But if that's what people do when they listen to it, I think that's awesome. But yeah, that isn't like what I was thinking about when I created it. It was more of like a, I don't want to say mood music, but contemplative, I guess is the best word I can come
Because
up with.
sometimes when I listen to instrument only, you know, the mind can form many, many things, you know.
Of course.
And for me, listening to the same song, my mind can and turned it to a dime and make it tell you something about something different than what it had perceived in the, you know, in the past.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or what the composer or performer was thinking.
Yeah. Yeah, which is great, you know, because the mind is very, very powerful, you know.
Heck yeah, it is.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Now, sometimes it can be a danger. Sometimes it's a complete blessing in disguise, too. So
that's right.
Yeah. So, okay, now we can go all the way back to the 80s or something, you know. So,
sure. Let's go back.
All right. So, before there was a career, before teaching and writing, you know, what was your first connection to music? As far as hearing it, you know, whether it's some kind of noise or sound, or I want that to happen in my life all the time.
Yeah, that's an easy question actually
okay.
for me to answer because
Good.
My father was and is a professional musician.
Nice.
He's 79 years old, still playing music. He
still
owns a
young,
music company.
Right?
For sure. He's at the Y working out almost every morning at 5:30 in the morning. He's a bundle of energy, my dad. He's a pretty cool guy. Business owner, still working full time, still playing music nights and weekends. You know, almost every week I'd say he has a gig. And so he and my uncle are both professional musicians. So something that I saw from a very young age. He got me started playing piano lessons when I was, well, even before I started taking lessons. I mean, we were listening to music all the time. My mother's a music fan, so she always had the radio on at the house. But my father would be a little bit more intentional. He'd be putting on his vinyl records a lot when I was a kid, and I remember listening to jazz, classical, Frank Sinatra, you know, Luciano Pavarotti, the Beatles, Chicago. We had a Prince vinyl. I mean, all this great, great music. Carole King, you know, just all this great stuff. And I remember listening to both my mother, just sort of more passively, just sort of environmental in the house radio, and my father, like, let's take out the vinyl, let's read, you know, the sleeve, and let's put it on the thing, the turntable, and you know, both of those experiences. And then ended up taking piano lessons when I was about 7. Saxophone lessons when I was 9, and knew at a fairly young age that I wanted to do something with music. I would say by the time I was in middle school at the absolute latest, I wanted to be Billy Joel.
Billy Joel's amazing. Mm-hmm. And it's funny that you brought up the Beatles, because I'm a big, huge fan of the Beatles. You know, I always... I always ask everybody, do they prefer the Beatles over Rolling Stones or Rolling Stones over Beatles? And 99% of the time, it's always been the Beatles. You know,
it's definitely the Beatles for me. I love the Stones, but
I do too. But the Beatles,
there's something about that Lennon and McCartney magic.
Right.
You know, those songs. And they're so unique and so special.
Right. Yeah. And I am a big supporter of anything physical, you know, because I got hundreds and hundreds of vinyl records over there in that corner, you know.
Awesome.
I just love picking up the record and looking at the pictures, you know, the little sleeve jackets, you know. It's amazing now that you can't get from streaming, you know. It's weird now, you know.
It is weird. I think there's I don't think streaming is bad necessarily. It's easier to access, and you have access to more things, and it's great for exposure.
Yeah.
But there's something missing, like you say, from having something in your hand, for caring for a vinyl record, for, you know, carefully taking it out of the sleeve and then out of the paper and then, you know, carefully putting it on the turntable and putting in the needle in just the right spot, you know, and then you could look at the album sleeve and look at the lyrics or the track listing or the instrumentalists or who produced it or where it was recorded, or there's something lost.
Right. Yeah. But I strongly feel like vinyl and cassettes are coming back strong, you know, because for a while cassettes weren't even sold in, like, you know, ever, you know, but more musicians now are releasing brand new albums on cassette tapes.
Wow, I knew people were releasing new vinyls. I wasn't familiar that people were doing cassettes as well. That's interesting.
So I ran out and got me like an all in one, like a vinyl player with the cassette. It's like, oh my God, dude, this is all coming back, And I love
That's
cassette
it.
tapes, because cassette tapes, man. I used to collect a lot of them back in the day.
Well, we're the same age. Cassettes were the rage in the 80s, right? I mean, that's all there. Well, everyone had cassettes.
So, we talked about how you was a good connection to music, but so when you first heard that sound or anything, can you remember the feeling you had behind that sound or,
I was exposed to it so young, it's hard for me to say the feeling I had initially. What I will say is, when I first started really getting into jazz and understanding what they were doing, in particular the artist, I was an alto saxophone player when I was a kid, and that's actually what I went to college for. And my father is a saxophone player, and he's had a vinyl record of Charlie Parker. He actually had a couple vinyls of Charlie Parker, one with a bird with strings, and another some of the Savoy recordings. And I was listening to that. And once my father and my second teacher started teaching me like what the jazz artists were actually doing, how they were improvising those melodies and the structures that they were using to improvise those melodies in real time. And I realized what they were doing instantaneously creating this music based on this pretty loose structure and the these sophisticated melodies that they were coming up with. It was almost like a religious, I don't know how to describe it. It was almost like a mystical experience for me. I would become so transfixed with what these performers were doing, these great jazz performers like Charlie Parker and John Coltrane and Sonny Rollins. And I just became sort of like mesmerized with what they were doing. It was so mind-blowingly beautiful to me, that it's this closest thing I can compare it to, almost like a religious or a mystical experience.
I know exactly what you're saying. It's something you can't explain. You just have to be there in the moment to actually get what you and I are trying to say to my listeners. And it's very powerful. Music is very, very powerful. So what death is most is correct me if I'm wrong here. Because I'm ignorant to the fact. Jazz is based on is a genre based on listening, correct?
Well, yeah, I think all music is listening is an important part of all music, but I think jazz more than any, probably. And the reason I'm sorry.
I say that because I know that okay, correct me if I'm wrong again, but most jazz is instrumental instead of lyrics, correct? Okay, and that's why it's more of a listening feature than just understanding what
Oh,
guys are
I see what
saying.
you're okay. You're not talking about the performers. You're talking about the listeners. Yes. Okay. So yeah, in that case, yeah, jazz is, well, I'm,
Kind of, sort of.
yeah, I think it's fair to say that jazz is mostly instrumental. There is a lot of vocal jazz, but even most vocal jazz will have long extended instrumental sections. It's very rare to have a song, even in vocal jazz, that's like sung all the way through for 3, 4 minutes. That's very rare. Relatively, that's relatively. So yeah, it's like what you were saying before. It becomes incumbent upon the listener to sort of draw their own interpretation from what they're hearing, and to make their own meaning of it, which is
Very powerful,
kind of the special thing about it.
I said that to bring up this, and I want your thoughts, So when somebody regularly listens to songs, they're more lyrical based, Guns N' Roses, Mamas, Papas, you name it, whatever, you can understand where you come from, right? With jazz in the listener aspect, how does one how do you listen to jazz? You know, and is there a correct way? You know, because I want to know if you should listen to the drums first, the keyboard, the you know, all the there's so many instruments in jazz. You know, it's hard to listen to one thing at one time. But is there the absolute correct way how to listen to jazz?
That's a really sophisticated, interesting question. No one's ever really asked me a question exactly like that before.
Oh, nice.
I
Okay.
hesitate to say that there's a right way or a
Yeah.
wrong way or a best way.
Yeah.
I think the best thing you could do with any music, whether it's, I guess with music with lyrics, the text usually becomes front and center. But in my opinion, as a musician, I try to listen to like the whole wash of the whole thing. And then if I listen multiple times, then I can start to notice things that are going on more like I can listen with more depth and more detail to the individual things that are going on if I listen to it multiple times. But if I'm Excuse me. If I'm only going to listen for like the first time, I'm almost always just going to sort of let it wash over me as like a big sort of aesthetic moment of
Like
just
a,
sound.
yeah.
Like the what they used to call the wall of sound, Phil Spector, right? Just
Right,
like the wall. Just
yeah.
let it be just like a wall of sound, and like I'll just kind of crash into that for a minute. So I wouldn't listen to anything. But the other thing about jazz, like you would say in most music with lyrics, that the singer and the text that they're singing, the lyrics that they're singing become front and center. In jazz, also, more often than not, there will be someone either playing the melody or someone playing a solo. And it is very clear when a certain player is being the featured soloist in any given moment. And that will More often than not, that'll come to the front. So, for example, if you're seeing a jazz quintet and there's, saxophone, trumpet, piano, bass, drums, it'll be very apparent to the listener, even if they're just listening, that they're not at a live performance, even if they're just listening, it'll be very apparent to the listener that the saxophonist is taking a solo at a given moment, or the pianist is taking a solo at a given moment. So that's what sort of grabs the ear and the focus when you're listening to jazz. But I don't think there's necessarily a right or wrong way to do it. Just sort of let it happen.
Yeah, because I've always wondered how people listen to different things, you know, and it's very weird and cool at the same time. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah, well, people have very unique relationships with music. Everyone, I mean, there are commonalities, of course, but I think everyone kind of experiences music in their own way, right? Has their own unique experience, their own unique connection to music, what they prefer, what memories come up, all what speaks to them, what lyrics speaks to them, what melodies speak to them, what grooves make them move their body in what ways. I mean, everyone has their own sort of like relationship with music. It's the one of the best things about it.
There's two genres that I think are more like passionate than any other. Okay, so let me back it up. Okay, I've been to clubs, you know, blues clubs and jazz clubs where people just get up and they're not even in the same band. They don't know each other from Adam, you know, but they just get up and just start communicating without looking at each other, just feeling the music, you know. So my question to you is, what can everyday people learn about the way that jazz people get in such perfect harmony, you know, with playing, and they don't know anybody, you know, from the band or something, you know?
So you're referring to like the classic, what they call the jam session model,
Yes,
right?
yes, yes,
It's
sir. Yeah,
the
yes.
jam session.
Yeah.
It's when the,
So where people
people that
just
have
get up
never
and
met just
yeah.
get up. And I think there's a couple important takeaways there that make a lot of sense musically, but just in our lives and the way we interact with each other in our daily lives. And that is, first of all, those individual players have done their homework and they know the tradition, right? So they know the songs, they know how to play their instruments, they have facilities on their instruments, they know about how like the music theory works and what notes work over which certain chords and things like that. So they've done their homework, they've done the work, they know the material. So what that means is that means that they speak a common language. And even if they've never played together before, the fact that they're all coming from the same tradition means that they kind of speak a common language. Not a language like English, but a language like a
Right, yeah.
musical language. And then the other thing that's cool about the jam session model that I think we can take into our lives is, and this is my favorite thing about jazz, and it's kind of like my favorite thing about just, like America in general, which is that it's that perfect balance between individual expression and everybody working together to make something beautiful, right? So jazz, I mentioned before, we were talking about soloists, right? So you
Right.
always have whoever your soloist is at any given moment. So let's just say, for the sake of this hypothetical, you got your saxophone
Okay.
player taking the solo at the moment. It's that saxophone player's time to shine. And we all encounter these things in our lives where it's like, it's our moment to shine and we're prepared. We've done our homework. It's time for us to step up. It's time for us to, either use our voice or maybe to give a presentation at work or to release an album or whatever it is we're doing in our lives. It's our time to shine. But then there are also times where, you know what? It's time for the piano player to take a solo. And we got to figure out, we've still done all this work. We're still contributing to it, but we're not the ones shining at this moment. We're the ones supporting. So I think that there's a beautiful thing about jazz in that respect too, which is that, the having done the work,
Yeah.
knowing the stuff, knowing the material, knowing the repertoire, knowing the theory, speaking the common language, knowing when it's your moment to shine. And being able to listen, know when it's not your time to shine, and when it's time to play a subservient role to a bigger whole.
Nice. So thank you for that. That was very educational for me,
Oh,
It
thank
seriously
you.
was, because I, you know, because I've always wondered, now, how did he play perfectly in harmony and in sync with him, even though they're two, it's just mind-boggling for me, So, yeah, so thank you for that,
Oh, it's my pleasure.
I would love to play a little, I call lightning round. And this is like a mini game where I just play this or this, and you tell me the first thing out of your head. You can explain it, do whatever you want, okay? Is that all right? All right, perfect. All right. Miles Davis or John Coltrane? I know it's hard, so I'm gonna. Yeah, I know. Right? Or both. You get them both if you want to, I guess.
I guess if I had to pick one,
Right.
that's a tough call. If I had to pick one, I'd say John Coltrane.
Okay.
And the reason is, do you want a reason or just
Sure.
short
Yeah.
answers?
No. No.
Okay.
No.
The reason is that, like, to me, there's just such an emotional depth to that music. Miles was more prolific. He had a longer career. He excelled in more genres. He had more different types of bands. All that. Miles is an absolute legend, and I'm not putting him down, but just the
No.
sheer
Yeah.
raw emotional depth. I'm going to go with Coltrane.
Nice, nice. One jazz album every musician should hear before they die. Album.
I would say one jazz album.
Yeah. Hard question too, I
Okay,
know.
let's.
Okay, so
It's a cliched answer, but
yeah.
okay, since we're talking about John Coltrane,
Yeah,
let's say a
okay.
Love Supreme. John
Okay.
Coltrane, a Love Supreme.
Yeah.
And it, for that exact reason,
Yeah.
just emotional depth.
Okay.
You know, there, it would be great to hear some of the Miles stuff. It'd be great to hear some of the Duke Ellington large ensemble stuff. It would be great to hear some more modern music also that's being made that's really fantastic. But just pure raw emotion. Let's go with
Right.
John Coltrane, A Love
I'm
Supreme.
dying. Oh, pick.
Yeah.
Favorite jazz pianist of all time.
Oh, let's go with Herbie Hancock.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
I've heard of
Let's
him.
go
Yeah.
with Herbie Hancock. I've had the absolute pleasure to see him perform live a couple times, including last year at the NJPAC here in New Jersey, and he is I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing if it wasn't for Herbie.
Right. I love it. I love it. A favorite jazz club you've ever played in?
Favorite jazz club I've ever played in. Let's go with I'll pick one outside of New York because
Okay.
I don't want to seem like
Right. Right.
it's got to be somewhere from where I'm
Yeah.
from, right? So
Right.
let's go with where else have I played that I've really enjoyed? Oh, I played at this jazz club once in my 20s, and I don't remember the name of the club. It was in Ann Arbor, Michigan,
Okay.
right outside of the U of M campus. And I don't remember. Is that the Bird of Paradise? I'll have to look that up.
Okay, yeah.
But I had a really great experience there when I played there.
Nice.
Okay.
Now, this is more like a two question answer, okay?
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you between all of these between these four, and then I'm need you or want you to explain it to me because I don't know much about jazz. So bebop, swing, cool jazz, or fusion jazz, which,
All of the above, but if I
all
have
the
to pick
above. Okay.
one, let's go
Yeah.
with bebop.
Okay. Now is okay. So going further in depth, is there like a major turning point between all four of them that you would instantly recognize, or how does somebody,
Yeah, so I brought up
okay.
Charlie Parker before.
Yes.
So I think like the I hate to put it all in one person because it's
Yeah.
never nothing's ever that simple, right?
Right.
But really, like if you listen to the swing music that came before and during the beginning of Charlie Parker, and then you listen to what he was doing on the saxophone in the 1940s, it's a very striking difference in
Okay.
terms of just the sheer the harmonic sophistication, what he was doing. He was just the melodies that people were playing. They were great instrumentalists. The swing players were great players on their instruments, but they didn't have the harmonic sophistication that Charlie Parker and Dizzy Gillespie and Bud Powell and those people had in
Okay.
the 1940s at that level of harmonic sophistication. And then Miles Davis, shortly after that, came up with the cool jazz school and his
Yeah.
contemporaries. Jerry Mulligan and Lee Konitz and all those, Dave Brubeck, great players. But I would say Miles is kind of like the one who sort of brought that to the forefront of jazz. And that was, I don't want to oversimplify it, but that was more of like a simplification. It took some of that raw energy of bebop and just sort of was like, hey, let's just chill out, right?
Still out, right?
And then
Yeah.
fusion, again, Miles is at the forefront of fusion as well. Fusion is obviously incorporating rock elements into jazz.
Yes. Yeah.
And Miles in the late 60s was one of the first people to do that with his Bitches Brew album and In a Silent Way album and Live Evil album and all that great stuff that he did in the late 60s and early 70s. But I love all four of those
Right. Oh,
genres of.
yeah. Easier questions now.
Yeah.
Do you have coffee before a performance or no?
Usually not
Okay.
because caffeine affects me very
Have
deeply, and I'm
yeah.
usually performing in the evening, and I don't want to be up all night.
I well, I I never had decaf coffee, and I assume that's, you know, that's not good for you either, but you know.
Yeah, the strongest thing I would usually have before performing would be like a Diet Coke.
Diet, okay, love it. Yeah.
Yeah.
What is the earliest gig that you can remember right now?
Earliest like in the day or like the earliest in my life?
Earliest in your life, I guess.
I started playing with my dad. The first time I played a gig with my dad, I went up with and like played along with my dad, not for like a whole night, but just like a couple songs with them. I want to say I was like 14
Okay.
when I
Okay.
first started like going up and playing the saxophone with my dad when he used to play the lounges. But I didn't start playing like regularly, like going out, you know, once or twice a week and playing music for the whole night until I was 16.
Six. Okay, nice.
Then I was doing it qu quite a bit. Like
Right.
my junior senior year of high school, I was playing
There you go.
very often. Yeah.
Now I'm probably gonna agree with you on this because I think I know your answer.
Yeah.
Studio recording or live performance?
It depends on the genre of music, but I would say 99% of the time, live performance.
That's what I thought you were gonna say. So I'm yeah. There's definitely like a live show. You know, you just gotta be there in the moment. You
Yeah,
know.
I think some things work really, really well in the studio. You know, I think of a band like Steely Dan, for example.
Right.
Some of that yacht rock stuff is like it was just made for the studio, you know. But like, more often than not, I'd almost always rather hear it
Right.
live.
Yeah, nice. Song that you played 100 times, but you still like, yes, I love this song. This is the first time playing it live for
Oh.
anybody,
Wow.
you know.
Oh, that's a
Or
great
is there a
question.
song for that, you know, because a lot of people don't like playing songs over and over, you know. Because
I would.
Radiohead doesn't like playing I forget the song, but yeah, they don't like playing their
Creep.
Creep. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes,
Yeah.
yes, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of people don't like playing their big hits. I know, like Billy Joel, for example, doesn't like playing Just the Way You Are. You know, it's
Yeah.
just like certain things that get played over and over and over and over again and keep getting requested over and over and over again. That, you know, it's like, come on, can we move on and do something
Right.
else?
Exactly.
One song that every time that I play it or hear it that affects me very deeply emotionally is my wedding song, which is Can't Take My Eyes Off You by Frankie Valli.
Great song. Great
It's a
song.
great song. It's a very special song. And not only was it my wedding song, but also it's a great song. And also my first Broadway show that I conducted was Jersey Boys, Four Seasons, the story of the Four Seasons. So there's a lot of like really formative memories for me attached to that song.
Oh yeah. One more question. What one instrument you wish you could master instantaneously? Like you just pick it up. I know it, you know.
That's easy, the guitar.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
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 I play very little guitar. I could probably play about five or six chords on the guitar. I wish I could just pick up a guitar and play anything. Because like the piano, it's like you can instantaneously make all the music you need to make. It's like an orchestra. But the problem is there's very rarely a piano wherever you are, where you could always drag a
Right.
guitar around and make music anywhere you are. So yeah, that's my answer.
I don't think there's a miniature piano you can just put in your backpack and go. You know,
Nah.
it's like, you know, yeah, there's always keyboards like this big or something, you know. Wow, you know.
Yeah.
All right. So before we let you go, I want to give you a shout out first. Everybody can go to J Elefante, that's ELEFANTE.com. And you have a book out right now that you can buy
I
on
do,
Amazon.
yeah.
It's called An Endless Knot.
Yep.
And
Yep, yeah, jelefante.com. I appreciate it. It's a book about, you know, forming citizens for democracy, which doesn't sound like it's about music, but a lot of it is about music. There's an entire chapter in there about how music is what connects us all. There's another book in there about the importance of arts education and how we can train, you know, ourselves to be good citizens in a democracy by the skills that we learn in arts education. Another another whole other chapter about the theater education, learning empathy and listening, and through theater education. So yeah, there's a lot of music and theater in there. So hopefully your listeners would find it valuable.
And you are on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook, correct?
Yeah,
All
all the
right, so.
stuff.
And are we doing TikTok? Because I still don't understand it. I don't know how anybody,
So yeah, my relationship with the socials is complicated. So
Mine too, yeah.
I have accounts on all these, but I'm not super active on them, I gotta be honest with you. I was like when I first released my album, I was on there a lot and like trying to engage with listeners and with people, checking out the music. But I found it was a place that I could really get lost easily and just sort of.
Easy,
So
easy to get lost.
I try to stay away. But I'm on there. I'm on all the socials.
Cool.
You just search my name.
All right. So, dude, I love you to death, and I hope you come back anytime you want to.
That sounds
Oh,
great.
I want to express everybody to go out and buy your albums, those albums, because. He
Thank
get
you.
because our artists get more money from physical merchandise than streaming, you know. So I just wanted to say that before we leave
Well,
it.
thank
But
you. I mean, if it's the choice is streaming or not listening, then stream.
oh yeah, please
But
stream if you're not.
if the choice is streaming or physical product, yeah,
Go
I
to
would love it if
physical
you bought
all
my
the
record.
time.
You could see all my liner notes that I took all the time to write and see all the people that are playing on the record and all that
I
good
just love
stuff.
that, you know. I just love the whole
Yeah, me too.
physical merchandise and look at it, because I'm sure you know who AC/DC is, you know.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Right, who doesn't, man? And
Right, right.
their album Ballbreaker has this unique insert that's like all comic book art inside, going through all the song. You can't get that with streaming. I mean, there's no way you
No.
can look at that streaming, you know.
You're right, though. My daughter's 14 and she has a turntable in her room. She loves getting vinyl records. All the stuff the kids listen to, Taylor Swift, Sabrina Carpenter, Olivia Rodrigo, all that stuff. They're all releasing vinyls. And
Yes,
they're
which is
putting a
great.
lot of work into these vinyls. Artwork, lyrics, all these photos, all this great stuff. I hope it's, I'm knocking on wood, that vinyl's gonna make a comeback.
Nice. Yeah, well, hopefully vinyl back. Not sure about
Yeah.
CDs, you know. I haven't seen a lot of CD sales, but who knows, you know? I don't know. But Joe, we love you here, and please come
Yeah.
back into the time you want to, okay?
Thank you, James. Really appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And with that said, everybody, thank you for listening to the episode today. And always remember, when words fail, music speaks. Bye, guys.